New from U.S. author Mike Palachuk, Camp America. Here's what American poet David Ray has to say. Mike Palachuk reminds me of Socrates, the gadfly who asked unwelcome questions, Diogenes with his lantern looking in vain for an honest man, Chekhov, the man with the hammer challenging the complacent family to share their meal, Kerouac, the ever-on-the-move, somewhat hysterical searcher, and he also reminds me of many Americans who as children were so blasted with propaganda that they're devoting the rest of their lives to challenging the lies and all who tell them. In this land where babies are brought by storks and buildings collapse due to unpatriotic bricks, we need the gadfly, because no leader, preacher, guru, or saint will wake us up, though the doomsday clock is ticking close to 12. David Ray, American poet, author of The Endless Search and The Death of Sardanapalus and other poems of the Iraq Wars. To order Camp America and all of Mike Palachuk's books, go to the New American Dream website, www.newamericandream.info. Howard Zinn writes, Mike Palachuk writes with passion, wit, and always with a strong social conscience. Camp America, from author Mike Palachuk. The website again, newamericandream.info.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C., until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
Just a ride. And we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. A choice right now between fear and love. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now. Do a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
And now, coming to you live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in Duluth, Minnesota, Dreaming the New American Dream, with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Palachuk, brought to you by the Rock Creek Free Press.
One month ago tonight, a publisher, web designer, and an American writer kicked off New American Dream radio show. They didn't know what they were doing, but it didn't go too badly, and there have been three more shows since then. And guess what? Tonight, here we are again. On that first show, I shared with listeners my dream for a new America. I quoted Dr. Martin Luther King's dream speech, pointed out that his dream did not die when he did. In many ways, closer to his dream than we were then, but in many ways, we fall short. Then, I told you, I have a new American dream. A dream that we can work together and play together in peace. Dream we can help each other instead of tearing each other apart. Dream we can lead the world by doing good rather than dominating it or failing to do so because we imagine we're better than everyone else. I dream of a world of equal opportunity where no one starves and we all accept each other, faults and all. I have this new American dream. I'm Chuck Fregg. I welcome you to our show. And now, without further ado, I'd like to introduce my co-host, Mike Palachuk, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck. How you doing?
I'm fine, Mike. How are you tonight?
Good. I'm just checking the sound here. You can hear me okay and everything's all right?
I can hear you okay. There seemed to be a lot of noise in the background tonight.
I'm off here on the side room, and it's if it's coming from me, it's there's a heater on. And we live in a duplex, so it could be that maybe it'll shut down when the. I'll try and talk louder. Anyway, tonight we've got Sherwood Ross and Rex Butters. Sherwood comes to us from Coral Gables, Florida. I think that's kind of down by you, Chuck, and I believe Rex is in Los Angeles. I met Rex a couple years ago at a reading in Santa Monica. I'm from Northeast Nebraska, so I don't know if Santa Monica, I think it's the same as Los Angeles. Anyway, hello everyone from Duluth and Fort Lauderdale, Coral Gables in Los Angeles. New American Dream, what's this all about? It's about becoming the country and the people we always thought we were. That's what it's about. The most profound events in the history of mankind are the thus far successful lies about the involvement of the U.S. government in the attacks of September 11, 2001. The faking of the moon landings, the CIA overthrows of governments around the world, the murders of JFK, RFK, MLK, Malcolm X, the events in Oklahoma City, Waco, the control of the media, the whole subversive takeover of the U.S., so subversive we most of us don't even know it's happened. It's in the spirit of the Soviet Union, while unlike the people of the Soviet Union, we Americans believe we are free. Lyndon Johnson, the Vice President of the United States, planned and carried through the murder of John F. Kennedy. And even today, almost 50 years later, that seems like a bold statement. And that's only because ours is a very singular society. All the while, we pointed fingers at the Soviet Union, declaring them a closed society and pointed back at ourselves, boasting forever of a free and open society. We are anything but. We have been anything but. The ones who ruled the Soviet Union, well, they had nothing on the ones who ruled us. Did you ever see The Truman Show? I wonder if America isn't something like that. Yes, those successful lies are more profound than anything else in world history ever. That's what we had to boast about, successful lives. It's just also very well done. It's who we are. You know, Americans don't make cars, but we do psyops like the Greeks did truth, philosophy, science, astronomy, discovery. And so the most profound big things about this big thing called America is that it is a lie. Bummer, dude. Well, anyway, baseball training, spring training is open this week. I'm watching, taking care of the Twins, watching them. On the other hand, we all must admit that we live in fascinating times. The idea that we live in an age when Bigfoot and UFOs have not, in quotes, been discovered yet, and when we can still research such fascinating topics as the JFK, RFK, MLK murders, Waco, Oklahoma City, and 9/11 mysteries, not that they're fun, but that they're fascinating, and still not discovered or accepted by the mass culture. Some say it's goofy, this stuff, not real, you know, it's just conspiracy stuff. And I'll give you that. It can appear that way, but it's goofy only if you don't read anything. I suppose it's goofy sounding if your sense of reality comes from American Idol, Today's Best Kitchen, America's Biggest Hamburger, Brian Williams, Katie Couric, Bill O'Reilly, Jim Lehrer. That's the way it was when I was a kid. We watched Gunsmoke, Bewitched, My Favorite Martian, The Flying Nun, Gilligan's Island, and thought that was all we needed to know. So when they told us Lee Harvey Oswald killed JFK and that Janet Earl Reed killed Martin Luther King and Sirhan Sirhan killed RFK, we said, okay, and then went into the kitchen for an ice cream refill. My realization about what this country is really about, what it has become, is when they ruled that Bush won the election by the stopping of the counting of votes. senior there. I ran for Congress for the Democratic Party in Iowa, the Northwest corner of the state. I realized, of course, that they killed the Kennedys. When they stopped the counting of the votes, that's what I thought of. I stopped. Of course they killed the Kennedys. They can do whatever they want. And you might ask, who are they? That's a good question. Another fascinating mystery to work on in the laboratory of the United States of America. And you can say that's conspiracy tinfoil to think like that about the Bushes and the assassinations and such, but I say it's just paying attention. Remember, they want us to be afraid. We cannot be afraid.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C., until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
And now on to the news briefs.
Last week we reported that Mark Kenney in Omaha was to go to court, federal court, for crossing a line off at Air Force Base. Mark Kenney was sentenced to a six-month prison term in Omaha federal court by Magistrate Judge Thomas Falcon. The judge is allowing Mark to self-surrender, which means Mark got to go home and then wait for the BOP to pick him up or to assign him to a federal prison to do his six-month sentence. This process takes between a month to 6 weeks. Mark will be notified by mail or phone when a site has been assigned to him, and he'll self-surrender at the assigned prison. Mark can be contacted at 402-598-2403 or markfpeter@gmail.com. This is from the Jeanette Rankin Peace Center in Missoula, Montana. Dear friends, we have just been approved to develop a peace license plate for Montana. We are very excited because this is a proven fundraiser and one more way for us to keep peace visible across Montana. Glenn and Amity Parks are finishing up a design for the plate based on the popular Missoula Peace sign stickers. We will need to pay $4,000 to the Motor Vehicle Department to get the plates made and ready for distribution. Would you like to be a founder of this project, they ask. Two coordinating council members have stepped up to make the project possible and thought others might like to join them. If you would like to make a special donation, please contact Betsy at 543-3955 or peace@jrpc.org soon and get your vehicles ready to give peace a chance.
From the Catholic Worker School, there are still spots open for this workshop. Greetings. This is an announcement of an upcoming school session at the New Hope Catholic Worker Farm and Agronomic University, located just south of Dubuque, Iowa. The session will begin on Tuesday, March 15th at 5 p.m., will end Thursday evening, March 17th. If you'd like to register, please do so by phone, 563-556-0987. Space is limited. At the retreat, they'll use Gandhi's teachings to explore the meaning and relevance of integral nonviolence. There'll be shared silence, small and large group discussion and reflection, manual labor, if able, and many opportunities to draw on participants' own life experience. New Hope Catholic Worker Farm and Agronomic University. It's in Lamont, Iowa, 563-556-0987. The retreat will be conducted by Chris Moore Beck. His own experiments with nonviolence have included human rights accompaniment in Colombia, war tax resistance, and car-free living. I do that, too. He's currently working on a master's degree, exploring the theory and practice of Martin Luther King Jr. and the Civil Rights Movement. He lives in Chico, California. And from Revolution Books in Seattle, join us in a discussion of a new statement from the Revolutionary Communist Party on the strategy for revolution. An excerpt, many people insist there could never be a revolution in this country. The powers that be are too powerful. the people are too messed up, too caught up in going along with the way things are. The revolutionary forces are too small. This is wrong. Revolution is possible. Of course, revolution cannot happen with conditions and people the way they are now, but revolution can come about as conditions and people are moved to change because of developments in the world, because of the work of revolutionaries. As people come to see that things do not have to be this way, as they come to understand why things are the way they are and how things could be radically different, as they're inspired and organized to join the revolutionary movement and build up its forces. Revolution will not be made by acting all crazy, trying to bring down this powerful system when there's not yet a basis for that, or by just waiting for one fine day when revolution will somehow magically become possible. Revolution requires constant work, building for revolution, based on a serious scientific understanding of what it takes to actually get to the point of revolution and how to have a real chance of winning.
This is from the New York City War Resisters League. The next planning meeting for the March 19th War Tax Resistance event in Union Square is this Sunday, March 6th. Who, the New York City War Tax Resisters, supporters, and everyone opposed to war spending, March 6th, Sunday, 2 p.m. The place is 339 Lafayette Street at Bleecker Street in Manhattan, buzzer number 1, or look for the sign on the door. For more information, please call 718-768-7306 or email. This is from Meredith Abbey and the Anti-War Minnesota. If the U.S. chose a military intervention in Libya, in the event of U.S. military intervention in Libya, there will be a hands-off Libya demonstration at the Federal Building in Minneapolis at 4th Avenue and 4th Street. It will be the same day at 4:30 p.m. if the announcement is made before noon. If made afternoon, it will be the next day at 4:30. Watch for an email announcement. For more information, call WHAM 827-5364. Margaret Randall and the WHAM annual meeting, Saturday, March 5th, 10 a.m. at St. Joan of Arc Hospitality Hall, 4537 3rd Avenue South, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Well known to many Minnesotans, Margaret Randall is a poet, writer, photographer, and social activist. For many years, she lived in Mexico, where she co-founded and co-edited El Cuerno Emplumado, The Plumed Horn, a bilingual literary journal, and in Cuba and Nicaragua, where she raised 4 children, wrote, conducted, and published extensive interviews with Cuban and Nicaraguan women, worked in writing workshops, and edited collections of Cuban and Nicaraguan poetry. Upon her return to the U.S. in 1984, the government ordered her deported because of opinions expressed in some of her books. After an almost 5-year battle, her citizenship was reinstated. Her more than 80 published books include Cuban Women Now, Sandino's Daughters Revisited, Christians in the Nicaraguan Revolution, Risking a Somersault in the Air, and her latest, As If the Empty Chair, Poems for the Disappeared. Admission is by donation. WHAM's annual business meeting will follow. Tuesday, March 8th is International Women's Day. There'll be an event, Women Stand Up Against Repression, in Minneapolis at the Waite House on 2529 13th Avenue South, Minneapolis. The speakers will be Jess Sundin, a leader of the Anti-War Committee and Freedom Road Socialist Organization. She is one of the anti-war and international solidarity activists targeted by the FBI and grand jury. Also, there will be Sarah Jane Olson, former political prisoner from involvement with revolutionary movement in the 1960s, longtime Twin Cities resident and anti-apartheid activist. Tracy Mulm would be there, an organizer with SDS at the University of Minnesota. She is one of the activists targeted by the FBI and the grand jury. Also there will be Lucy Guillen Givens of the RNC 8, unjustly charged with felonies for protests at the Republican National Convention 2008. What is International Women's Day? In 1908, women mainly from the garment industry came together in New York City's Rutgers Square to demand a strong union in the needles trade and the right to vote. In 1910, German revolutionary Clara Zetkin, having heard of the powerful protest in New York, proposed that March 8th be celebrated as International Women's Day worldwide. Today it is a holiday celebrated by millions of working people to honor women who stand up and fight for their rights. On March 8th, hear from 2 women who have had their homes raided by the FBI, on September 24th of last year and are now facing a grand jury for their international solidarity and anti-war activism supporting women around the world. Also hear from other women who fight for justice and have faced state repression, sponsored by Freedom Road Socialists. Also from Minnesota, from Minneapolis, the unknown story of the St. Patrick's Battalion, Friday, March 18th, 7:30 p.m., you need to go to Mayday Books, 301 Cedar Avenue, Minneapolis. During the U.S. invasion of Mexico in 1846-1847, some U.S. soldiers, many of whom were Irish immigrants, left the U.S. Army after brutal treatment and joined the Mexican Army. They were called the St. Patrick's Battalion, or San Patricios, as the Mexicans called them. After the U.S. defeat of Mexico, most of them were hanged. Not surprisingly, this remarkable and courageous story is not in our history textbooks, but it is depicted in a film called One Man's Hero, starring Tom Berenger. Come see the film and join in a brief discussion, organized by the Minnesota Cuba Committee and May Day Books, endorsed by the Anti-War Committee.
And that's the way it is, February 24th, 2011.
Okay. Now I'd like to welcome our guest poet, Rex Butters. Rex Butters in Los Angeles or Santa Monica. For over 25 years, Rex Butters has published poetry in journals as diverse as the Trestle Creek Review, Brain Vomit, Caffeine, Inner Bang, Bad Haircut Quarterly, and the anthology The Cost of Freedom. For 35 years, he's written about music. He's written liner notes for artists as diverse as Albert Eiler, Lead Belly, and Brother Jack McDuff. He performs solo and with the improvisational music spoken word ensemble, Black Shoe Polish. And I understand that Rex is not with us until we get Rex. I would like to talk a little bit about the anthology that Rex was a part of. The Cost of Freedom was a hardcover nonfiction book. It was one of the few nonfiction projects I've ever been involved in. It was published by Howling Dog Press, Michael Annis, and Whitney Tretien, out in, she was going to Harvard at that time. And, she was the editor. So it was really Michael and Whitney that put it together. It was a really great project. But the idea behind The Cost of Freedom was that, well, one time I listened to radio at home. I was living in Iowa at the time, and there was something about how the local soldier had, I think we had passed away in the war, in the Iraq war, and they talked about how that's the cost of freedom. And you know, I just knee-jerk disagree with that. I disagree that the soldiers are you know, dead or are now or going to die for our freedom. I just think that's a big bunch of malarkey. I think that the real cost of freedom is being paid by protesters. And I think if you're, as the old saying goes, if you're enjoying your freedom, you should thank a protester. And that's what that book was all about. And it was very cool. I have a poem here that I'd like to read. It's posted on the New American Dream website. It's by Marilyn Buck. And Marilyn Buck, well, I never knew her. I just barely knew about her. But she was in prison for a long time from the 1960s. And let me see, she got out of prison. I don't know where she was exactly. It was in a federal prison somewhere, but she got out of prison, and I think it was within 2 weeks she passed away. So they just barely let her out. But I'm going to read at least a portion of this poem. It's a kind of a long poem, but it's interesting. I think it's just so interesting. It's a poem on 9/11 by an American political prisoner while still inside an American prison, and it's incommunicado. Dispatches from a Political Prisoner by Marilyn Buck. Before morning slow, I move. Juliet hollers, come, come see. The World Trade Center's exploding. She's not serious. No one could make that up, would they? Maybe. Live on TV, video mantra, replay, plane crash, replay, collapse. Slow motion, dying morning. No, not a made-for-TV movie, not a disaster film, not Hollywood special effects. One tower falls, the other follows. Do chickens come home to roost? Enormity crashes, dazed disbelief. Chickens won't roost here either, pigeons either. I, a political prisoner, can conceive why. But comprehension is not complicity. I look around me, I know nothing, I know too much. There is no answer in death, nor in dying. I know soon others will die. Dark smoke spreads, cinders of wrath rise, the eagle's talons flex, hungry for revenge. Eyes locked on the shocking scene, a Muslim sister whispers they will blame the Muslims. I know many will feed the eagle, the Palestinians are always suspect. Muslims, Arabs, many will die red upon the land. I can't comprehend men who commit suicide taking civilians with them. A U.S. postal worker, Columbine High School kids, a man at McDonald's, all American suicide killers. Civilians used as warheads, I shudder and walk away from death to my cell. Dick Kim runs in. If there's a World War III, they will shoot all the prisoners, won't they? I shake my head, I don't think so, but you, political prisoners like you, won't they? I hope not. Question marks the corners of my mouth. What do I know about the fine print? I turn to sweep the floor, find rhythms of the ordinary. The order, 9 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time. A tap, I turn, a guard, come with me. I won't return today. I stand before the captain. We must lock you up for your own safety, not for my safety. You're intelligent, you know why. I speculate, no, not for my safety. You must be locked up just for your safety. I am stripped naked, ID card confiscated, everything taken. I need my glasses. Keep the glasses. I keep a neutral face, handcuffed behind the back, clad in bile yellow for isolation and flip-flops. I keep outrage wrapped within my fists. I swallow anger. Metal clangs swallow sound. The concrete cocoon swallows me. The shoe, special housing unit. There was an old woman who lived in a shoe. What did she do? 9-11, no prisoner may speak to you. You may not speak to any prisoner. 9-12, overheard voices. There are terrorists here. Who are the terrorists? Silence. Everyone behind her door listens. 9-14, a legal call. Small relief. It's political, Washington. Not something I did. 9-17, no more calls. No visits, no mail until further notice. Incommunicado. I hang from a winding string. Winding in this cocoon, I breathe deep. The air isn't good here. From outside the wall, Susan yells, "You are not alone." I breathe deeper. Sunday, I get a radio. KPFA Lifeline. Sikhs dead, detainees disappeared, political prisoners buried deeper incommunicado. I remember another September 11th. Chile, 1973. More than 3,000 dead, tortured, assassinated, disappeared. A CIA-supported coup. The WTC bombers not yet born. Many people there still mourn. Let us mourn all the dead and the soon to die. I worry about the prisoners. Isolation sucks at the spirit. I am furious. Inferred association held hostage in place of men. With U.S. weapons and CIA training, an infernal joke. The puppet masters laugh. I laugh to stay sane before I explode in irony's flame. We are hostages to bloodthirsty oil men ready to splatter deserts with daisy cutters, their collateral damage, dead mothers and children, dead mother, earth, dead daisies. Hasn't this happened before? U.S. cavalry, smallpox, blankets, special forces, and blanket bombing. I walk around the edges. How many walk on edges? What edges do the Palestinians walk? Cold radiates whitewashed. Walls press against my edges, suspend animation, no butterflies to break out, no silken thread to weave sweet dreams. Panic rises in my throat, thick, white, choking, cold, so cold. I swing hope on a thread, a transparent sliver crashes against the cinder blocks. I drop frozen chrysalis cold into a coffin box. Night. I lay down and suspect. Blankets, a cyclops light pins me onto the metal cot, an altar for vengeful gods, metal restraints for hands and feet, just in case. The suicide cell has ghosts. Desperate women have lain here, Jane Fore pointed to command, composure sacrificed to voyeur visions through the glass, starkly through a burqa window. I don't want to think of it. I meditate. I think of other politicals behind wires and walls. I remember the assaulted, the accidental, the collaterally damaged, killed, corrected, coerced. I remember the U.S. funds, the fundamentalists, Muslims, Christians, Zionists, self-righteous missiles of mayhem and retribution. I remember Afghani women held hostage inside indigo cocoons, cells smaller than a confessional box. My veil is this cell. I will put on no other except the veil of sleep. The light, damn the light, the cyclops spies I pass between the tomb-thick walls. How long will this go on? Will my bones break into ice shards, or will they desiccate stranded in this shell? At last I doze. Till dawn, the cyclops watches, clanging keys, slamming metal traps. Shift change, daylight creeps inside, I rise, I must seek cycles inside, without clocks or mirrors, without all but I. And the poem continues on. If anybody would like to read the continuation of that, you go to newamericadream.net and just scroll down. There's a lot on that page. Just, it's in the middle. Just keep scrolling until you see the large picture of Marilyn Buck. I'd like, you know, just the idea that she was in prison, a political prisoner in the U.S., on 9/11, and to be, you know, have limited access to what was happening outside, and then to be put into solitary confinement, and to be, you know, to wonder about all that was happening. I can only imagine. And it's, I guess, I don't know how she wrote that poem. She must have had to keep writing it over and over in her head. I've been in somewhat of a similar situation, and if you don't, you just have to keep repeating it over and over again. And when you finally get to a piece of paper, you it all floods out. But maybe next time we'll get Rex Butters on. Maybe just something happened. Sometimes I might have given the wrong time zone thing. So. Maybe we'll talk to Rex next time. Okay, Chuck.
This program is funded in part by a grant from the Rock Valley, Iowa Guns and Ammo Reform Church. What would Jesus do? He would shoot first. Do not let immigrants and terrorists and communists get any closer than 50 yards. Take them out. High-quality ammo, packaged and repackaged with an eye for good savings by the Dutch. If you ain't Dutch, you won't live much. Not around here, partner. Guns and Ammo Reform Church. Sunday services, 8 and 10:30.
Chuck, tonight's show is also being sponsored by Wawa Weewa in Nebraska. You're in good hands with Wawa Weewa. For make benefit glorious nation of Nebraska stand. And additional funding also provided by GoBarbaraBush.com, as well as the United States Navy, a global force for good. United States Army, be all you can be. United States Air Force, peace is our profession. And the United States Marines, the few, the proud, the brave, because you can't handle the truth. This program is also funded by John Stewart and Stephen Colbert, or Pussies, Incorporated of Council Bluffs. Why don't these liberal funny guys talk about 9/11? Are they just afraid, or is someone buying them off? John Stewart and Stephen Colbert, or Pussies, Incorporated of Council Bluffs.
Sherwood Ross is a native of Chicago, Illinois. He's got a degree in race relations from the University of Miami. Worked as a reporter, as a playwright. He was founder and host of the radio show Speak Up at WOL, where he conducted a war on slums campaign. And then he went to Mississippi. In 1966, in June, he covered James Meredith's March Against Fear in Mississippi and served as Meredith's press coordinator. And Meredith was shot on the second day of the march south of Fernando, Mississippi. Ross helped Meredith get into an ambulance, accompanied him to a Memphis hospital. His eyewitness account of the shooting was redistributed by the Washington Post and LA Times Wire nationally. He talked about it on the Today Show. He's worked on political campaigns. His bylines have appeared in virtually all major U.S. dailies. And he's just done an incredible amount of things. Today he resides in Coral Gables, Florida. I'd like to welcome to our show.
Well, I'm glad to be here and have the opportunity to talk with you.
Great. We were discussing earlier that your first play was produced in 1952, which is the year I was born. I thought that was kind of interesting.
It was called The Peacemonger, and I really got to say, I haven't changed my position one iota.
That's good.
I was a peacenik then, and I'm a peacenik now, and I'm proud of it.
Oh, me too. Me too. I believe that you you wanted to share a poem with us. I'd like to start off with that.
Thanks. This poem is called Imperial America. I'll read a few excerpts from it for 4 or 5 minutes worth. People can look up on the Internet Imperial America by Sherwood Ross. It's on 20-30 Internet sites. And this section of the poem talks about the victims of Imperial America, dragged from their homes by the thousands, never prosecuted, never even charged, flung into 100 prisons from Thailand to Morocco, from Poland to Iraq, by the United States of Corrections, jailer to the world, king of incarcerations, prisons and abandoned airplane hangars, prisons and open uncovered fields, prisons and the holds of creaking ships, prisons and CIA compounds, prisons on islands in the tropic seas, secret prisons and secret places, a safe house in downtown Bucharest, Romania, a riding academy in rural Lithuania, prisons for ghost prisoners, prisons for forgotten men, forgotten faces, prisons hidden from the Red Cross, prisons of the hopeless, prisons of the lost, prisons of the Yankee double cross, prisons of men, of women, of girls, of boys, stripped of their clothing, their dignity, their rights, set upon by men and dogs, bathed night and day in artificial lights, teenage girls hosed with icy water. Why are you doing this to me? One girl kept crying. Because you are a terrorist, it's no use denying. Teen boys assaulted by criminal guards. You're tortured, every man's son, every man's daughter. Children covered with mud before their father's eyes. Men told to talk, or the jailers would rape their wives. A seraglio of suffering made in USA. 250,000 arrested in error in the name of the fraudulent war on terror. That's one businessman wrongly imprisoned would crack. I bought my last Cadillac, Imperial America. You know, once there was the land of the free, once the proud land of the Wright brothers, Edison, creativity, Edison who gave the world the phonograph, the motion picture, Hollywood, the electric light, the inventor whose genius transformed night into day, an American, and a benefactor of all humankind, honest and proud, a man of 1,000 inventions sprouting like dreams from his fertile mind, so different from today's death scientists in the Pentagon's secret laboratories, hunched over the incubators of germ warfare, space warfare, nuclear warfare, shells with radioactive ammunition, creating infants in Iraq still born with one eye and other unimaginable grotesque conditions. Behold the progeny of gangster presidents, war criminals, and liars whose Statue of Liberty shines wrapped in barbed wire. Oh, beware, Americans! Americans, beware! We are slaving on the pyramid of Pharaoh, slaving on his monument to death, building his war machine with every sucking breath. Oh, beware, humanity, humanity, beware. With our deadly flying chariots, we are become a nation of Iscariots. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and in the hour of our death. Amen.
Well, that's some powerful stuff, Sherwood.
Well, it's all from the headlines, you know that.
I know it. I know it.
It's all from the headlines. The stuff is going on every day. Yeah, how many people did they try from Guantanamo so far? Four or five? I don't know what the total is. But this has been replicated all over the Middle East. They've got thousands, tens of thousands of people that they've arrested and they've never brought to trial. This is one of the great colossal international injustices that has ever been perpetrated. I don't think Napoleon did this. You have to look at Hitler, you have to look at Tojo, you have to look at Stalin to find dictators who engaged in criminality on this kind of massive schedule.
It seems that the bigger they make the lie, the more people believe it.
Well, yeah. And, you know, the United States today is like a lunatic asylum. The politicians are making people paranoid and afraid. Iraq is going to get us, you know. Iran is going to get us. And before that, it was Ho Chi Minh is going to get us from Vietnam. Mm-hmm. These countries don't have 1/60th or 1/70th of the money devoted to the military that the United States does. We are a super empire of such enormous power, the world has never seen anything like it, ringing the planet with almost 2,000 military bases in the States and around the globe. And here, somebody is trying to make us afraid of Iraq or Iran? I mean, this is preposterous.
Certainly is. Sherwood, you've had a long and storied career. If you were to pick out one or two things that you're most proud of, what would they be?
Well, I would pick a couple of things that nobody has ever heard of. When I was 19, I enlisted in the U.S. Air Force, believe it or not. I was very naive, and I discovered it was filled with corruption. And my own drill instructor was asking the basic trainees for $4 from each of them to get them off KP, of course, times 60 men, he'd collect $240. This was at Lackland Air Force Base, and it was just riddled with corruption. And I suppose I played a role in contacting the authorities outside the Air Force installation so it couldn't be hushed up inside, and they called for an investigation, and the sergeants who were involved in the scam were court-martialed and convicted and sentenced to hard labor. So there was, at least at that time, some justice in the U.S. Air Force. But I exposed myself to considerable risk, I suppose, in doing this.
I'm sure you did.
You know, that's something you always have with you. On another occasion, I was working for the Wilmington, North Carolina Morning Star. This was a few years later. And it was the beginning of the school year, and they assigned me to cover the opening of school. And there were two high schools in town, one black, one white. And I said I would cover them. And the editor said, oh, no, we only cover the white high school. And I said, well, then you go along without me. And I quit. And this has happened to me on other occasions in my career as a journalist. I've had to turn my back on those in charge because what they were doing was just morally reprehensible. That's all there is to it. That's the only way you can put it. I would say that I was proud of those two things. But those are the kinds of decisions that a lot of journalists make all the time, and it's common in the trade of journalism for the news side and the advertising side to be hostile toward each other, and good reason. There's good reason for it, because many times the advertising side puts pressure on the news side not to tell the truth, not to break that story. And if you're a competent journalist, well, you just refuse.
How many times did you get fired in your career for that?
Well, I don't believe I've ever been fired anywhere.
But
I have quit a number of times. Another time, I was working for a newspaper called the New York Inquirer. This was 1957. And I was writing feature stories and having a wonderful time. And one Sunday, I opened the Inquirer, which was soon to become the National Inquirer. And there was a picture of a double spread of a New York City policeman holding the head of a black boy who had been decapitated on the subway.
Oh, my God.
And I went to the circulation manager, and I said, what's happened to this paper? And I said, that's the worst thing I've ever seen. It's monstrous. And he said, yeah, sure. What he said, when my wife saw it, she vomited. But our circulation has gone up on the newsstand by 11,000, and now we're gonna go in for gore every week. And I said, goodbye. And that paper gained rapidly in circulation and became the National Enquirer. So these things do happen, and journalists have got to stand fast. Photographers have got to stand fast and not run those pictures. Journalists have got to refuse to write stories. They're pressured all the time. The New York Times reporter who covered the CIA beat believes that he was harassed by the Central Intelligence Agency. And reporters have to put up with government harassment now. Free speech is no longer taken for granted in America. If we don't defend it, we're not going to have it.
Well, I'm a strong believer in free speech. I think that the best way to defend it is to use it. You have to get out there. You have to say what you think. And sometimes there are some consequences that aren't very nice.
Right. But, you know, democracy is not an easy system to live with. It can change. The United States has shifted from being largely a democracy to a nation now where democracy is greatly imperiled and where totalitarianism has crept up on this country and is evident everywhere you turn, everywhere you look. The United States is becoming more totalitarian. It is the most feared country anywhere in the world, and for good reason.
And unfortunately, many Americans are proud of that fact. They think, oh, well, since everybody's afraid of us, nobody will attack us, we're safe. I don't really like that point of view. I like to think that everybody could be on the same side if we would just talk.
Well, I don't believe that the average American is proud of a country that is trying to dominate the world. In the poem, I talk about Imperial America and the death factories of the Pentagon. And we got a couple of hundred laboratories in the United States working on germ warfare, and some overseas. And many of these laboratories are in American colleges and universities. And you even got students working on developing germ warfare. And this is really for offensive purposes. Nobody is threatening us with germ warfare. The Russians shut down their germ warfare factories decades ago. So this is really all for offensive use. And President Obama is continuing it just the way he's continuing and expanding the Pentagon budget, which now spends more for war than all 50 states of the United States spend for the health, education, welfare, transportation, and safety of their citizens. The Pentagon is taking, what, 53-54% of the tax dollars of the American people for war. So you get a situation where seven of the top defense contractors, seven men, between them, made $500 million in the period from 2002 to 2007. That's $500 million for seven people, while we've got 35-40 million people living in poverty in America. I mean, this is disgraceful.
Well, it certainly is. Sure, what I'm afraid to say, we're almost out of time. I feel like we just started, but I hope you'll come back to visit us again sometime, and we can talk some more. Is there anything you would like?
It's been a pleasure to be on your show. Thanks, Chuck and Mike, Kalachuk.
Well, thank you. Is there anything that you would like to say in parting?
The greatest power in the world that I have ever seen is the power of nonviolence. I walked with Dr. King in Mississippi, and I saw how he preached nonviolence and how nonviolence changed the face of the South, brought down legalized segregation and opened the doors of opportunity. And it is the power of nonviolence that we need to call into play now, both nationally and globally, period. Have a good one.
Well, Sherwood, thank you very much. And those are some words to take with us.
Well, Chuck, it's been a long week in Mount Liberty, Nebraska, my hometown. Father Ralph is the pastor of Good God Almighty Parish in Mount Liberty. It's his home. He grew up in this town. GGA was his first assignment out of St. Paul Seminary. And after he had his runaround of assignments over the course of the next 40 years, Randolph, Broken Bow, Scribner, Fremont, and two of the big-time West Omaha parishes, and then one stint of 5 years at Holy Family in North Omaha, he asked to come back to Good God Almighty. It's his last stop. End of the line, ball game's over. Father Ralph didn't have much to do at Mount Liberty along the lines of saving the world, but he was listening on TV about Wisconsin, and he had also watched on TV the news about the revolutions in Egypt and Libya, and he got one of those massive emails from some group that he might have sent money to one time. It said in the subject line, "Let's change America on Saturday." Right, he thought. Millions missed their yoga lessons to march in the streets of Washington, and still they bomb Iraq. Americans and others held for years without charges because of the Patriot Act, and everybody yawns. Abraham Bolden, Secret Service agent put into a mental hospital for years because he sought to tell the truth about the Kennedy assassination. Barry Jennings disappeared because he told the truth about the Building 7 demolition on 9/11. Then there's Waco, Oklahoma City, the Gulf of Tonkin, Vietnam, Karl Rove. But still, maybe, and he found the yellow pad in the middle drawer, and he thought he might just see what would come out if he prepared a homily ahead of time, one last time. So he wrote on his yellow legal pad, "Wisconsin, we're all cheeseheads now." Ralph crossed it out and out, and while he was crossing it, he was thinking. He slid his rolling chair to his desk and tugged hard on the middle drawer, raked through the vanilla folders, and found the old homily he might want to give again this Sunday. Maybe now was the time. February in Nebraska, and Father Ralph wore a sweater and long underwear under his green vestments. The altar area smelled of the branches of evergreen curled around the toes of St. Joseph and Mary on either side of the altar. Well, anywho, there was this child I recall back 100 years ago in the past century in 1963. This young boy was standing by his green table with his Flintstones lunchbox on the table. He found his way from home by landmarks each day for afternoon kindergarten at St. Agnes Elementary School, down the street to turn left at the Red Hunting Dog's place, then past the playground fence, turn left to the front door, then the first left again into the big room, then toward the center of the room until he found the table with the green border. There he stopped. The morning kids had just left and the boy put his lunchbox on the table. The brand new shiny metal box held his banana and his beads for the Christmas tree. On the blackboard, which covered the whole one side of the room as big as a bus, his teacher had engraved in new white chalk, President Kennedy. Soon all the children were gathered for the afternoon session. They stood beside their tables for the Pledge of Allegiance. Just as they had finished, the principal, Sister Mary, came in and talked to Sister George. The kids remained standing as Sister Mary told the children that President Kennedy had been shot and killed. The boy felt a warm stream down his leg as his socks became wet and a puddle formed between his feet. Well now, a bit later, years, decades, generations later, that boy was researching the Kennedy assassination and found a tape recording of attorney Jim Garrison being interviewed by Johnny Carson on The Tonight Show. They were talking about the shooting of President Kennedy. The man felt an affinity for Mr. Carson because his family had long watched the famous man of late-night talk television. He recalled the hot summer nights with the windows open to let some air through and the faint breath just stirring the curtains. He recalled walking down the alley to the neighborhood grocery store, which was air-conditioned, and stepping into that dark, cool store with a wooden slab floor and the hum of the frozen food machines and the smell of baseball cards, bubble gum, and popsicles. But he also felt an aversion because he now realized that while Mr. Carson talked on television and the boy's parents sat on the sofa and watched with the blue light reflecting off their faces, and the kids kind of scooting over on the floor to get close enough to the screen door to think about asking if they could go out again, terrible things were happening. Father Ralph, filled his chest with air. He let it out, filled it again, and held it. He moved his hands to the front of the podium and smiled while he looked around at his audience. The homily had once been the boogeyman of his seminary training, and he knew it was only by grace that he was able to stand up there in front of all these good people every week without turning around to run away and join the circus. And the man felt again like a child as he listened to the interview on tiny headphones, just as a child feels when he realizes he has been lied to. He wrote a letter to Johnny Carson. He wrote to the great Carson at a mysterious address in California. He wrote,
"Mr. Carson, my parents and I used to watch your show every night before bed. It was our routine, as it was for many others. Perhaps I saw your interview with Jim Garrison when it first aired, though I do not recall. I must be frank, because I don't feel I'll get a second chance to ask you. Why did you treat Mr. Garrison as you did? Which is to say, quite rudely, almost as if you were accusing him of doing wrong by trying to find the killers of President Kennedy. Were you protecting the real killers of the president? Of course you were. What else can I say but that it's obvious now, with almost 40 years of perspective, the Warren Commission was a supreme joke. Garrison was onto something, something frightening to be sure. But why did you have so much allegiance to the plotters and none to your dead president? Are you still afraid? You could do so much good for your country if you tell the truth even now, even 40 years later. Why not? Who caused you to act as you did on that night? Up until now, thanks in part to you, we've been forced to live in Disneyland since 1963, where everything is unreal, everything is entertainment and illusion. Please tell me, as I will never know myself, is wealth and power worth the sublimation of the truth? Sincerely, Ralph Brockelman."
Like a newscaster with nothing left to do, Father Ralph arranged his papers on the podium. He listened for the signs of disgust, coughs spreading like a grass fire or the hymn books being pounded closed. Ralph held his paws for a count of 1,005. He let his chin rise. He saw mostly upturned, pleasant faces. He let a drop of sweat sit on his nose. Ralph let his glasses slip and peeked over the top like a soldier over the rim of a trench. The great Carson could make justice appear. Justice appear, he said, poof, out of nothingness in the palm of his hands. He won't. It, justice, has appeared on occasions in the past because good men went through the fires of hell to make it happen. They fought the bad guys. As a song or saying or something goes, the revolution will not be televised. You can't catch it after work or tape it for later. The revolution is live. And it will not happen unless you do something. The last word hummed like trapped angry bees inside the microphone. Ralph pushed on the middle bar of his glasses. He looked at the back door for the bishop. Out of his peripheral vision, he checked both side doors for the troops that would march him from the altar to the city jail. If we do nothing, if we shake hands after Mass and agree that all is well, we mean that all is well with us. All is well in our home and on our block, and that is all that matters. And then we are the problem. He paused again. When I lived in that nice neighborhood with the soft breeze and the distant call of the train engine, I wish I was certain I was in a good spot. Without ever really sitting down to think about it, I was absolutely sure, before my feet hit the floor each morning, that things were in place. Everything in alphabetical order, counted and blessed. And I was wrong. And now, what this country needs more than cheap gas or friendly hometown banking is a democracy movement. We need someone, some skinny, brave soul, some old man on his way home from Safeway, some afternoon willing to sit in Tiananmen Square and say enough is enough. One person could do something. For lack of one courageous man on the Warren Commission, generations have lived entire lives in a fantasy world of Ferris wheels and mirrors. Kennedy was going to get us out of Vietnam. Eisenhower before him had warned of the influence of the military-industrial complex. Those people who make money from weaponry, and then those forces who took Kennedy out as he was making some sort of peace with the Soviet Union as well. And so tens of thousands of young Americans were slaughtered in Vietnam. Thousands of American families with a forever thorn in their side. And Nixon and Ford, Carter, Reagan, Bush, Clinton were able to continue to make money from war, from death, from a slug of metal formed in a young Iowan's hands in some small-town bullet factory, heating the cool morning air, making its way into the bone and viscera and brain matter and memories of a young man on the other side. Lyndon Johnson did it, didn't he? He wanted to be president so bad he could taste it. Then he saw he was shut out of the Kennedy administration, and before him he saw 4 more years of John and 8 each of Robert and Ted. He had to shit now or forever hold it. The priest smiled with his slightly bucked teeth and wavy hair that made him look for a moment like Robert Kennedy. We all know that, but nobody has ever actually uttered those words in America. Not the librarian in Mount Liberty, or the produce manager at the supermarket, or the superintendent of the Mount Liberty Public Schools. Responsible people, we assume. He squeezed the wood, smiled, and looked up at the ceiling fans twirling as he recalled the news that had shattered the quiet so many years ago. And so I bring up Kennedy, he said, matter-of-factly, as a shoe salesman saying that brown was the going color this year. Well, no, he was not Christ, and he was not resurrected, and he certainly was not a saint. He was a sinner through and through, just like me and just like you. He was a Catholic, yes, but no big deal. Again, anybody can become a Catholic. I bring it up because it is what is on my mind. Many of you do not remember John Kennedy. Many of us remembered nothing but. Where do these thoughts of John Kennedy, his brother Robert, and Martin Luther King Jr. come from? All mortal men, but in my mind, heroes, just as Jesus is a hero of mine. And to be a hero of mine, you have to do one thing. Ralph put up his crooked right pointer finger, the finger that had been stomped on. He held it over his head and out toward the congregation. You have to go and get yourself killed. He held the finger in the air until it became the focus of the room. Couples with their arms interlocked on the pew behind the heads of their children stared at the finger. Ralph meant to be pointing straight up toward the ceiling in exclamation. Actually, his broken finger was more of a comma. You can't score 6 touchdowns on one night and be my hero. Ralph spoke loudly, pausing, turning this way and that, using all his homiletics textbook skills. You cannot have 20-inch biceps and 30-inch waist and be my hero. He stopped an estimated 3 seconds, impatient to keep going. You cannot go to work each day and pay your bills and keep your kids in college and your wife happy and play errorless third base for the church softball team and be my hero. He put his hand down his parentheses. I see these guys who drive their little cars into the lot of the elevator every morning and leave every night. They do this without fail for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, maybe 40 years. They drive in each morning at the same time. They leave at the same time, same route, look the same way before turning, park the car in the same spot at work, same place at home. Now, to some people, that image is one of supreme heroism, the loyalty, the work ethic, the steady nature of the man going to work each day, earning his daily bread for his family, that they may prosper and live and grow and also maintain their routines. I'm weird. I see it as cowardice. I really do. And I know some of you are going to have trouble with that. That's okay. I see it as immoral, boorish, dull behavior. Because you see, during those years that man is going to work, maintaining a certain lifestyle, people around the world are dying from poverty, from war, what have you. And on some of those days, that man is going to work and coming home while this country is at war, outright bombing people in other countries, and they are dying. And yet he parks in the same spot, goes home at the same time. That is nothing unusual. His parents, wife, children, and friends expect nothing less. But is it the Christian response? Hardly. He paused, shoved the finger again into the air, and turned slowly to the right and to the left. He put his hand down and gripped the podium. You have to go and get yourself killed. So Christ, King, and Kennedy, they did not just die. They had to be killed. If I can offer one thing to you this fine morning, my brothers and sisters, it is this. Make the sons of bitches kill you. He leaned forward and whispered into the microphone. Now Ralph did not care if they liked him. The bones of his jaws showed like ripples in the water portending the shark below. He made direct eye contact with three people as he had been taught, not long enough to confront, but enough to show he was not afraid. Don't seek to live so damn long that you finally have to be unplugged. Make the bastards come get you. Make their terrible plans hunt you down and fill you full of holes, just as they did our Lord Jesus Christ. And take that chance, the chance taken by Jesus, the skinny guy with no money, no family, no friends, no career, no papers or books published, with only this one desperation shot at redemption, with one card to play that might mean he would ever amount to something. Take the chance that God is God. He pushed his papers together, looked up like Walter Cronkite at the end of the newscast, and smiled. Now let us pray. That's the news from Mount Liberty, Nebraska, where all the soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats are coward, and all the journalists are about average. Now a shout out to the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. See something, say something. What more inspiring words have ever been written? See something, say something. Think of Tom Paine, Ralph Waldo Emerson, Mark Twain. We at the New American Dream want to do our part in protecting the homeland. We realize the folks frisking chunky people coming into hockey games and NASCAR races and those brave men and women on the front lines of the airport scanner Maginot Line need our support. So we are initiating a program, Neighborhood Watch. We know the FBI and CIA and local police are usually the ones bringing drugs into the U.S. from Central America. And we know that the FBI and CIA killed John F. Kennedy and Robert Kennedy. So we know that it is the FBI and CIA and local police we have to look out for. So if you see these government license plates in your neighborhood, call someone. If you see something, say something. Call a Walmart department manager, or maybe that one guy who checks IDs at the Eagles Club on Fridays. And here are just a few license plates to watch out for, more as they come into us. G12-3472A. W-E-B-R-N-D. W-C-O, W-I-I-D-I-D-O-K-C, W-I-I-D-I-D-9-11, W-I-I-K-L-T-A-N-A-M-A. And in the spirit of the whole fair and balanced ethic of the United States media, we also wish to tell everyone about the New American Dream Red Phone, sponsored in part by Nike. As much as we'd like to talk, we'd love to listen, especially to those brave men and women in uniform serving to protect us from big bees overseas in over 545 countries around the world, as well as those who protect us on the homeland front from big bees from Mexico. So we have open lines, and it's really only open to the free and the brave, the armies of one, and those being all they can be. If you are one of those, we want to hear from you. Here's the number, 814-459-4599. And thank you for all you do. This phone's for you.
Profiles in Heart. To those who've given or are still giving their heart and soul, helping us all have a better world, our thanks for caring. And remember, Mr. Byron does not teach American history in room 203 at 10 a.m. in Sheboygan. He didn't yesterday. He won't tomorrow or ever. Mr. Byron doesn't know anything about American history. He does not want to. That's why he's been there for 33 years. If any of these names are not familiar, give them a Google search. And again, our thanks.
George Carlin.
Bill Hicks.
Lenny Bruce.
Steve Earle.
The Dixie Chicks.
Woody Guthrie.
Joe Teschetta.
Natalie Merchant.
Utah Phillips.
Dick Gregory.
Phil Ooks.
I'd like to thank our real sponsor, Rock Creek Free Press, and the New American Dream websites, www.newamericandream.net, and the show's website, theshow.newamericandream.info. From the show site, you'll see links to each one of Mike's books, and a link to my company, CWG Services. Join us again next week, same time, same place. Thank you, Mike. Good night.
Good night, Chuck. Stay warm. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Ken Lay. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
This world, man, before I go, I got to tell you about the world that I see. It's sad sometimes. You ever realize that we live in a world where good men are murdered, mediocre hacks thrive? You ever notice that? John Kennedy murdered. Gandhi murdered. Martin Luther King murdered. Jesus murdered. Reagan wounded. Cancer 8 times. Now that fucker still wants it. That guy is Jason, man. Take off that hockey just once, you're gonna find, well, I'm back. People love it. Love it. Every fact points that he's a liar, corporate muppet, devil, cock-sucking fascist. Every fact points to that. Not one fact to the opposite. But what happened?
We love you, Ronnie. Four more years.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C., until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
New from U.S. author Mike Palachek, Camp America. Here's what American poet David Ray has to say. Mike Palachek reminds me of Socrates, the gadfly who asked unwelcome questions, Diogenes with his lantern looking in vain for an honest man, Chekhov, the man with the hammer challenging the complacent family to share their meal, Kerouac, the ever on the move, somewhat hysterical searcher, and he also reminds me of many Americans who as children were so blasted with propaganda that they're devoting the rest of their lives to challenging the lies and all who tell them. In this land where babies are brought by storks and buildings collapse due to unpatriotic bricks, we need the gadfly, because no leader, preacher, guru, or saint will wake us up, though the doomsday clock is ticking close to 12. David Ray, American poet, author of The Endless Search and The Death of Sardanapalus and other poems of the Iraq Wars. To order Camp America and all of Mike Palachek's books, go to the New American Dream website, www.newamericandream.info. Howard Zinn writes, Mike Palachek writes with passion, wit, and always with a strong social conscience. Camp America, from author Mike Palachek. The website again, newamericandream.info.